to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in for John Williams as he takes the week off. On the phone line now is Elise Blink. And, well, I feel like we've danced this dance before.
Once or twice, Steve.
Nice to talk to you. How are things?
Things are good. It's a lovely fall day almost. Kind of concerned about, you know, whether we're going to get some more sun, but all things good otherwise.
Looking at the markets, I know the NASDAQ is coming off, what, its worst week since last March, but things look pretty good this morning.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. The NASDAQ was all the way down at about 7,000, believe it or not, in March, and it hit a high of 12,000. A few weeks ago, and now it's dropped back down. About 8% has come back a little bit, and it's certainly up today about 190 points right now.
The Dow is up 345. What's behind the increases?
I think you're seeing a lot of excitement around the TikTok purchase or partnership, or we're not really sure what it is, right? It was supposed to be a complete divestiture of the U.S. operations, and now it looks like it might just be a tech partnership that wasn't okay before, but seems to be okay now.
Explain that for me, because they actually halted Oracle's trading for a time earlier because, well, I just don't know where we are. I'm sorry. I've been trying to keep up. I thought it was an acquisition last night, then China said it was off today. What's going on?
I don't think anybody really knows. I think that there were two U.S. companies going after the U.S. version. This, of course, because President Trump said that if he was going to shut down all TikTok operations in the U.S. if they didn't sell it.
Elise, explain for me why that is, why the president's weighing in on TikTok.
Sure. So there is some concern about how invested China is in ByteDance, the company that, these are all crazy names, I know, but the company that owns it, there's some concern that China was actually pulling the data out of it and was able to access lots of data about users of TikTok, many of whom are based in the U.S., although it's a global company. And President Trump decided that was unacceptable, and so he wanted the company sold to a U.S. company. And then that's where we are today. There's two big players. There was the Oracle, and then Microsoft was going after it. And it looks like Oracle might have won. But again, as you point out, we're not really sure what's happening.
Okay, so we'll follow that. When it comes to the pandemic, the numbers are coming down, right, across the country, but we're still seeing hot spots where the numbers are going up, and Wisconsin is one of them.
That's right. We are seeing kind of a leveling off, and I'm quoting Dr. Fauci here, a leveling off around the 35,000 number of new infections that are discovered daily, the number of deaths is around 1,000, sometimes a little bit below that. And that's a lot lower than the height. But if you think about where we were in April, where we were at 20,000 new infections, it seems a lot higher. Dr. Fauci has said that this is an unacceptable level. I am not a doctor. Don't even want to play one on the radio. But I would say that until we have a vaccine, what's clear from the companies that are not doing well, right? Movie theaters, for example, not doing particularly well. Restaurants are in terrible shape. All travel and hospitality in terrible, terrible shape. Until we have a vaccine everybody can rely on and feel like if you go out and go to dinner, you're not going to die for that.
Right.
I think we're going to have a problem coming back.
I want to talk about people's 401ks when we come back. We're talking to Elise Glink, who, of course, is the owner of Think Link Media and Best Money Moves, and the author of 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. Check that out. It's all at thinklink.com. It is 12:18. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. And we certainly thank them for that. Steve Bertrand sitting in for John Williams today. Elise Glink is on the phone line, the brains behind thinklink.com. And, well, really, did I hang up on her? No, we lost Elise will reconnect, because I was just about to say she's pretty much the brains behind every good idea that I've ever read about. But I'm sorry that she wasn't on the phone line to hear that. we're going to reconnect. Coming up after the headlines at the bottom of the hour, Jim Dahlke will be here from Chicago. And then there's a new college ranking out, I think. Amy Guth will be here, Chicago business reporter there. So let's go back to Elise. Elise, I was just expressing incredible praise for you while we got disconnected. I'm so discouraged that you didn't hear it.
Oh, well, we can just rerun that some other time.
Actually, I was being very nice. It's I know it's unusual, but it's a weird day. So tell me about 401ks, because the markets have rebounded, right? They are where or beyond where they were before. Now, I'm thin ice here, so correct me when I'm wrong. Are people's 401ks back to where they were pre-pandemic?
Most of them are doing just fine. Some people, of course, you know, when it goes down, you know, 30%, people get nervous and they maybe rebalance when they shouldn't. But the bigger, the more interesting thing is that with the CARES Act, when that was passed, it gave people the ability to withdraw up to $100,000 penalty free. Still would owe the taxes, but if you were under the age of 59 and a half, you wouldn't owe the 10% penalty on top of that.
Okay.
And it was widely expected that people would withdraw quite a lot of money, when in fact, it looks like just a small additional amount of Americans are withdrawing from their 401ks to cover expenses during the pandemic. So I think actually that's good news.
That sounds like great news, because it seems to me that, you know, if you're worried and you've got this money sitting there, there'd be a great risk to take it out, which would cost you down the road.
Exactly. You know, and I think part of the reason, again, was that in the, you know, right away we had the extra $600 a week, and so many people who were out of work were able to access that. And in some cases, it did provide them even more money than they were making when they were employed. And those people were putting that money away. And now some of those people have gotten their jobs back. We're still short about 11 million jobs or so,
right,
but a lot of people have gone back to work. And so what we're seeing now, according to several different surveys, is that people may have reduced the amount they were putting away. So maybe they aren't taking it out, but they aren't putting it in. And they're just sort of sitting there redistributing the amount that they're getting from their paycheck so that they can cover some of those expenses. Or we are seeing a few people, extra people above, let's say, a year ago, who are taking those additional withdrawals. And one of the things that I know from my work at Best Money Moves, our financial wellness company, is we've talked to HR leaders all across the country, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of companies. And one of the top concerns that they've had for at least the last 5 years is the number of people who have been using their 401ks like a checkbook. And unfortunately, that does seem to be happening, where you are taking loans and putting it back. And almost 16% of Americans right now have a loan against their 401k.
So that means, I can remember in the 90s when things were hot, people were saying, yeah, you can borrow from your 401k and just pay it back and put that money in the market and, you know, make more money faster. And I don't know that that was necessarily a good strategy, but what's causing it now? Why are people taking out the loans now?
Well, they're taking it out apparently to afford their everyday lives.
Mm.
And companies, many companies, in fact, I would say most without looking at the data, but most companies have a 401k plan that allows you to do that kind of short-term borrowing. And the deal is that you get to pay yourself back, and you pay yourself back a real interest rate. So that's sort of good. On the other hand, if you lose your job, you owe that money back into the account within 60 days. And that's the rub for all those people who lost their jobs because they had to pay back the 401k. And I'm not quite sure. The data's not out yet on whether that actually got done or it didn't get done. But I think one of the reasons you're seeing a higher level of withdrawals right now is those people just converted the loans into withdrawals.
So that's a pretty big... Okay, so instead of paying the loan back in 60 days, they just took it as a withdrawal.
I think that the data is going to show that. That makes the most sense, and it's a good explanation of why the number of people who are taking withdrawals has actually gone up.
That's a pretty big warning, I think, or a red flag that you can take the loan out, but if you lose your job, you got to pay the whole thing back in 60 days. That's a pretty big deterrent, I would think.
It is, and it's a double whammy for people. And we look back 10 years to see what happened to the Great Recession, 2008-2009, and we did see people withdrawing money from their 401ks, just like they were, you know, ended up with homes that went into foreclosure. And so one of the things that, again, another reason why I think we're not seeing even bigger withdrawals is that in addition to you know, the extra money that people were getting sort of week in, week out for unemployment, we've also seen these moratoriums go into place for the vast majority of people who have home loans. And so if you're not worried about losing your house, you're much less likely to have to borrow from a 401k. And so for the 7 to 10% of people who are in those kinds of forbearance programs, I think that's actually been a godsend.
What if you're at risk of losing your apartment? I see that 31% of renters started the month owing rent from previous months.
Yeah, this is troubling, right? So we're seeing that as of September, almost a third of all renters, it's not that they owed their full September rent. About 10% of people didn't get that paid at the beginning of September. So that was not a bad number. But there's a rent debt that's been owed, right? So month to month, you might have paid half of what you owed to your landlord, or a third, or maybe you did two-thirds, whatever it was that you could afford. But that rent debt accumulated. And so now what we're seeing is that 31% of renters have some sort of rent debt that they owe to their landlords, and some of it, at a very small percentage, maybe a couple of percentage points, those people owe $5,000 or more. The vast majority, the biggest chunk, owe somewhere between $1,000 and $5,000, or $1,000 and $4,000. And so it's a significant amount of money if you're actually earning only $52,000 a year.
Well, it's
right?
a significant so, amount of money if you also own a four flat and are trying to rent those out.
Yeah, it is. And so that's the problem that, you know, we've looked at on the show a couple of times with John, because what we've seen is, you know, the government stepped in with the CARES Act and it offered landlords also who have Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac backed properties. So that would typically be a four flat and in some cases a five flat. And they offered those guys protections as well. But unfortunately, there are a whole lot of landlords who don't have that protection,
right,
and they do owe it to their investors. And I think what we're going to see once these forbearance and foreclosure moratoriums are lifted, I think you're going to start to see a significant number of people, unfortunately, go into foreclosure. And that, in this state, will probably start to happen, I would think, in January, unless they continue to extend the forbearance.
When it comes to owing money in September from previous months, it's higher among people of color, black and Hispanic renters, 41%. 41% of black renters, 48% of Hispanic renters still owe rent from spring and summer months. So,
yeah.
And you know, it's we were a long way away, I think, from getting back to normal. And really seeing the bottom of this or how this is going to play out.
We are, and it's really awful that it's the black and Hispanic renters that are feeling the brunt of it, but it speaks to who doesn't have a job,
right.
And there's a much larger percentage of blacks and Hispanics who don't have jobs as well. Unfortunately, black and Hispanic families, households, are also the ones who have, you know, they own fewer houses by a significant margin. They actually have less family wealth by a significant margin as well. And renters of all stripes and colors are actually having to do a lot to just try and stay afloat in this economy.
That's...
So we're seeing another 30% run up credit card debts, another 30% selling off assets. It's really troubling.
Elise Glink, check it out at thinklink.com. Great to talk to you again.
You too, Steve. Thanks so much.
It's 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Jim Dahlke is on a phone line. Jim, of course, is senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Jim, well, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Steve, it's great to be on with you. Welcome back to the Business Lunch
kind
battle.
Of funny.
Good to hear your voice.
You can welcome me back, too. John Williams is off this week, so I'm here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And also, I'll be hosting the Chicago WGN Afternoon News from 4 to 7 every Monday through Friday, beginning on September 28th. So certainly looking forward to that. But looking forward to your conversation as well, because you know how I feel about you. I love talking about the things that you cover, and you're just a great guy. So it's good to connect on the air again. But tell me this. I was kind of ruminating about this earlier. It seems that during the pandemic, now we've got some interesting businesses to talk about today, that some of the innovation or some of the novelty businesses have sort of slowed. Am I right by that, or am I just not paying attention?
Well, I think now more than ever, you know, business metrics are very important. And so that can either mean good news or bad news for the startup world, depending on, you know, how solid your business fundamentals are, right? You know, I think what's interesting for Chicago, the city of Chicago and the city's startup kind of ecosystem is that, you know, its businesses have largely always had, you know, profit and revenue as, you know, goal number one and two, compared to Silicon Valley, compared to New York City, for example. You know, our businesses in Chicago tend to be a little bit more, bottom line centric than necessarily users or some kind of vanity metrics.
So,
right?
So less pie in the sky, sort of.
Say it again.
I said sort of less pie in the sky, more reality based. Yeah.
Exactly, and that's why I think the city is actually handling this a little bit better than maybe Silicon Valley.
Okay, so let's have a beer. No, let's have a, well, I can't decide. Do I want to have a beer or a hard kombucha? Let's start with the beer.
Sounds good. So, yeah, an interesting Chicago startup actually is called Pour My Beer, and what they've done is they've developed this really interesting self-pouring beer technology. They have basically built the technology that is in a lot of these self-pouring bars that are all around the country. You may have been to one. There's several in Chicago, a bunch of the suburbs, where instead of the bartender pouring you a beer, you go and pour your own and pay by the ounce.
Now, I really thought this was kind of a novelty. I remember I learned of it at a wine restaurant in Wilmette or Winnetka or something. I didn't realize that this was fairly widespread. How does it work?
It is. So basically what the bars do is if they have an entire walls lined with all different kinds of taps, and where you take your glass and you fill up your glasses as much as you want. So you could sample a couple ounces. You can fill the glass up all the way, and it allows you to kind of sample a bunch of different types of beers, all sort of pouring it yourself. And this company in Chicago called Pour My Beer has sort of built the bones behind that technology.
Okay.
And just last week got an investment from Coca-Cola. So Coke is backing the business. Actually, they backed it from their European Partners Venture Fund, and they're going to help kind of expand Pour My Beer's technology into Europe.
See, I would never do that, go for that, because I'd rather just ask for the free 2-ounce sample and not have to pay for it.
Well, yeah, don't tell that to the Pour My Beer business folks. but, yeah, you know, I think that what they have is, you know, technology that can expand beyond alcohol. I mean, what they sort of say is they're a liquid agnostic business, right? Like they can do anything. They actually have a similar coffee service at 1871 in Chicago in the Merchandise Mart. And so I think what you're going to see is they can bring this same sort of, you know, self-serve technology beyond just craft beer.
What does this do to the dram laws, though? I mean, the bars are responsible if people are overserved, if people are overserving themselves. How do they monitor that?
That's a great question. So at a lot of these bars, you get a little wristband. And so you scan your wristband before you pour a beer. And so basically the bar is keeping virtual tabs on you, knowing how many ounces you've had. And then once you hit a certain ounce threshold, you kind of have to go and get your wristband kind of virtually scanned again. And they're making sure you're not swaying left and right.
All right, let's go from there to this. Kombucha is something that I actually bought once because I thought it'd be good for me. It's still in the back of the refrigerator. It's a Korean drink, correct?
Yeah, so kombucha is a kind of an increasingly popular drink. It's a fermented black or green tea, very popular right now in startup offices, or was, I should say, before most offices closed down. Lots of offices around the city were kind of including this as a sort of an employee office perk. And, yes, it's become a very popular drink today.
And now it is but you can buy alcoholic kombucha?
That's right. So it's from a company here in Chicago called Luna Bay, and they have created a hard kombucha beverage. And really what they're doing is competing in the very competitive, very lucrative canned cocktail industry. So sort of in a way going up against the Trulies and the White Claws of the world with sort of their take on a hard kombucha.
Jim Dahlke, a senior editor at Chicago Inno. Listen, great to talk to you. Like I said, I'm going to be hosting the WGN Afternoon News coming up at later this month and then hopefully through the rest of my life. So I hope you can join me on that as well.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, Chicago is better off hearing your voice on the radio in the afternoon.
You're
so pumped good, for your
man.
Next role.
Thank you so much, Jim. I truly appreciate it. Time now for the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Fewer single-family homes in the Chicago area are on the market than at any time since January of 2007. Crane says inventory fell below 2,400, citing data from the Chicago Association of Realtors. One of the reasons for the low inventory is the jump to a new house might be too expensive. People also have been reluctant to go through the process of selling because of the pandemic. University of Chicago is number 6, and Northwestern University is tied at 9th in this year's rankings of the best universities by U.S. News & World Report. The University of Notre Dame in Indiana dropped to 19 from its slot at number 15 last year. The University of Chicago was the third highest ranked in the country until 2018. United Airlines and some major sports teams are being sued over how the airline staffs team charter flights. Two women and one black and one Jewish person, both over the age of 39, say the airline favors flight attendants who are predominantly young, white, female, and blonde. Major League Baseball and several NFL teams are also named in the lawsuit. The airline says it has a proud history of diversity and inclusion and says sports charter flights are largely representative of the airline's overall staff. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:52. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Steve Bertrand sitting in for John Williams for the first part of the week, and this is the time that John talks to WGN business reporter Amy Guth. Amy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Always nice to hear from you. How's it going today?
Well, you know, we've been talking beverages. We've been talking about hard kombucha. We've been talking about the company lets you pour taps, you know, yourself and measure them and things. So why don't we talk about Driftwell, this new product from PepsiCo, which, well, there was talk that they were going to put cannabis in beverages, right? Or CBD
yeah.
and things like that. This isn't that, but it says that it's going to help you relax at night?
Yeah, it isn't that, but it sure feels like a step in that direction because it is a little bit different, a different feel from what we're used to seeing from soda companies that are kind of all about caffeine and sugar, right, to kind of get us amped up. This is the opposite. So PepsiCo has launched this new drink called Driftwell, and it's aimed at helping us sleep at night. So you know, they've accelerated the timeline of this. This is something that was kind of in their performance water category, as it's called. Functional water, as some companies also call it. But they accelerated this because a lot of dentists and doctors are reporting an uptick of cases of people grinding their teeth at night, experiencing insomnia, things like that, due to the pandemic. There's a lot of stressful things in the world right now, so that makes sense to
okay.
me, right?
Okay, so, but this is where I stop you because I've yeah. just been hearing Jeff Carlin showed me that cracked tooth story. I think it was in the New York Times last week, and then
yeah.
USA Today picked up on it. It's kind of this weird thing, and what the implication is we're grinding our teeth at night because of stress?
Yeah, that's the implication,
okay.
certainly.
So,
I mean, I feel like I've always done that, so there's no difference for me.
Well, so what I'm throwing some shade at is this idea that they're responding to the pandemic, because this drink had to have been in the works before we started grinding our teeth over the pandemic, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so the sense I have from this, from reporting around this, is that this was in the hopper already, and it was just kind of accelerated a little bit and
sure.
brought up to speed a little faster, brought online a little bit faster. So what it has in it is about 10% of the daily magnesium value of what the FDA recommends that we have, and about 200 grams of theanine, I think that's how you pronounce it, but those are things that are supposed to help us sleep. And so that theanine is an amino acid that's in black and green tea and in some mushrooms, and some studies have suggested that that can improve sleep quality
what
and
kind
help
of,
with the physical
kind of,
part of stress.
What kind of mushrooms?
I don't know. I don't think magic ones. So.
Oh, okay. just check me.
But yeah, Well, I don't know. We'll have to find out that. But allegedly those things help with the physical parts of stress, and that would then help people sleep. So I think it's going to be interesting. This will be available in December. I mean, we'll see how that does, right? I think we are so caffeine obsessed as a people, right? We all kind of need that cup of joe in the morning. So we'll see if people kind of wean towards this. And I'm curious what it tastes like. That's what I don't know, is what on earth it tastes like. But it is a little can, because there is, they very delicately suggested that having a very big can of it before you sleep might wake you up in the middle of the night to run to the loo. So it's a smaller can that you can have right before you go to bed.
Okay, that's good to know, especially that last detail.
That's right.
If there was a cure for that, I think I'd be in, I would drink that every night.
That's right.
Okay, so the U.S. News and World Report is out with its college rankings. Ho hum, the University of Chicago's up high, so is Northwestern. But I'm so excited, I'm so surprised that UIC, University of Illinois Chicago, is at number 112 in the country. I would have not put it that high.
Yeah, that number surprised me. And it's a big jump too. It's on 112. It's up from 132. So that's a pretty big jump.
Yeah.
Of all the schools on this list, especially the local ones, that's the biggest jump on there. And it was, 132 last year. And it also this year came in number 30 in the nation in terms of ethnic diversity. It also tied Loyola and four others in kind of overall ranking. So, that's a really big jump. That's really interesting. What I think is interesting about this list is not only is it useful for parents and prospective students to kind of evaluate, because they have so many, you know, almost 20 different indicators of academic quality and graduate indebtedness and things like that, but it also really kind of stokes a little bit of competition between schools. We've seen this play out over the last year, schools making moves, schools struggling with budgets because they've had to make some really, really, big pivots to accommodate social distancing and health measures and things like that for students. So I think this list is, you know, we can kind of scoff at lists and say, well, what are they for really? But I think they do kind of have some degree of meaning to both families and the schools themselves.
Clearly U of I is still ranked higher at 47, but nice to see UIC at number 112. Amy Guth from Chicago Business, thanks very much for tuning in today.
Thanks
for joining us. That's what I'm trying to say. All right.
I know what you meant. It's all good.
We'll talk again tomorrow with any luck at all.
Sounds good.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Anna Devontis just around the corner.